Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Part of what drives my coaching career, and by extension this podcast, is to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. I believe that there is tremendous power in choice. We are confronted with choices from the time we wake up in the morning until the time our heads hit the pillow at the end of the day. Will I choose to believe in possibilities for myself? Or will I choose to believe in my limitations? Will I choose courage? Or will I choose fear? Will I choose to listen to those who believe in me? Or will I choose to listen to those who doubt me and tell me that I'm not good enough? Will I choose to do the work that I know that I need to do in order to move towards my desired future? And will I choose that consistently, every day, not just once or not just for a couple of weeks, but every day for the long haul? I spent about 10 years of my life recovering from an illness that one doctor said I only had a 3% chance of recovering. And here's what I learned. I had to choose possibilities. Even when I wasn't even fully sure of what those could be, I had to choose courage. I had to choose to listen to those who believed. When I think about my guest today, I think of someone who has the courage to listen to and follow his own inner voice of wisdom. He is the author of 3 books and counting. After 30 years of successfully leading a nonprofit youth sports organization in Berks County, Pennsylvania, he and his wife Sandy sold their house and all of their stuff in August of 2020. They now live full-time in an RV traveling the country with their golden retriever. When he's not busy speaking at events, they volunteer at various locations helping others. And they tell the stories of their travels and those that they meet through blogging, social media, and podcasting. He has dedicated his life to serving God by giving back and helping others. His name is Dan Clauser, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. Dan, thank you so much for joining me here on the Unyielded podcast.
Thanks for having me. Really looking forward to the conversation, Bobby.
I am too. So why don't we dive right in? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I am a full-time RVer. I had run a nonprofit youth sports organization for 30 years. And back in August of 2020, my wife and I decided it was time to kind of turn the page and start a new chapter and decided to sell all of our stuff and buy an RV and travel around the country. And to an extent, I'm kind of following in the footsteps of my mother, did a similar. She didn't use an RV. She took an old 1967 Plymouth Valiant, took the back seat out of it and turned it into a bed and decided to travel around the country and visit with family and friends and meet new people and did a lot of volunteer work. So I guess there was a part of it that was in my blood. And, you know, one of the things that we do while we're traveling is tell the stories of the people that we meet through this avenue right here, podcasting, through blogging, through, you know, written word and books. And we're absolutely loving it. So the title of my latest book is The Journey of My Mother's Son, Volume 1. The title of my podcast is The Journey of My Mother's Son, because really a lot of what we're doing is kind of keeping her legacy alive and hoping to do justice what she had done in her travels as well.
Yeah. And so I'm curious too, what in August of 2020, what led you guys, because that's a big change. So what led you to make that decision?
So it actually started, the seed was planted, I guess, in January of 2019. I'd taken 2 solo trips that year, and one was to Dallas, and then I came back around through Louisiana and back home to Pennsylvania, which is where this had started. A month or two later, I did the same thing to Orlando, Florida. And it was during those 2 trips, driving by myself, it was really the first time in my life that I'd actually taken the time to kind of enjoy the journey. I left a little early, so I wasn't on a tight schedule. We traveled a lot for my organization when I was running it, but those trips were always something that were on a tight regimented schedule where we had to be at a certain place at a certain time. We had to leave that place at a certain time, had to be at the next place at a certain time. And on those two trips is when it kind of was this aha moment of, wow, I think I now understand why Mom did what she did. And when I got back, I was in the process of adding 10 chapters to my first book, Beauty of a Diamond Through the Eyes of a Coach. It was difficult to write because of the amount of time I was putting in for the organization. I was literally working, you know, in season, 80, 90 hours a week. So it was tough to write. And when I got back from those two trips, I wrote like I hadn't written in years.
Wow.
And, you know, writing is something that's always been in my blood. I always enjoy doing it. I think there's a lot of power in the written word. And that's kind of when it hit me that even though I absolutely loved what I was doing, I loved, you know, helping kids and, you know, changing the lives of the kids we were working with. There is this, you know, this voice saying, look, there's more. It's time for a new chapter. And it didn't, I did not embrace it initially because, again, I loved what I was doing. And I loved my mother's story and I loved telling people my mother's story. Never in a million years would have I thought that my story would have resembled hers as much as what it does today. I finally bought in. You know, I think I was kind of having this internal battle, this, you know, conversation with God, you know, like, hey, you know, this is, I think you might have the wrong person because my work is to be done here. But the writing component, I think, is what really bought me in, made me understand that there was more to do and a different chapter, so to speak. So I ran the idea by my wife. She thought I'd completely lost my mind. And I kind of throw it back at her every couple weeks or something. And she was going through some stuff professionally as well. And, you know, some doors that she was hoping were going to be open professionally were not opening for her. And one day she came home from work and she was like, you know what? I'm in. Let's do it.
Wow.
So we, you know, started to kind of put the plan in motion. I let the board of my organization know that 2019 would be my last. And, you know, early 2020, we put the house on the market. Month and a half later, the strange thing, you might have heard of it, COVID.
Yeah. I've heard it mentioned here and there.
Yeah. I think I heard that.
I can place that.
Started to shut the world down. We were literally sitting in the RV dealership on March 20th, 2020, which was the exact same day that Governor Tom Wolf of Pennsylvania was issuing the shutdown orders for the state.
Yeah.
At that point, I had already left. I had a lot of consulting stuff and stuff lined up for, you know, when we started traveling. My wife had just been moved to working remotely, but we weren't really sure how long that was going to last. So there was like a whole lot of uncertainty in doing this. We had literally just taken our house off of the market because we'd had discussions with our realtor as things were slowing down that we didn't want to make it look like a stale listing, you know.
That's
so let's take it off the market and you know, see what happens. And so there's this all this uncertainty just swirling around what was going to happen, but yet there was also this incredible sense of peace that we were making the right decision. So drove the RV off the lot, took it back to the house. Was not part of our plan to have a mortgage payment and an RV payment at the same time. It was you know, sell the house, buy the RV, and hit the road. But it just like I said, it felt so right. Even though there was a lot of uncertainty, you know, in our lives and in the world at that point. And early June rolls around, the real estate market opens up again. We put our house back in the market, had four showings, had an agreement, which fortunately was a long settlement agreement. And we ended up settling on August 14th of 2020 and hit the road and have not looked back since. We really have no regrets. It's been the best decision we've ever made. It's been incredibly fulfilling. And you know, you can't even put into words the, you know, what this lifestyle brings, the freedom that it brings. But man, the amazing people that we've met has been absolutely incredible.
Yeah. God, Dan, there's so much in there. Something that really stood out to me is when you said, you know, you really loved what you were doing. Like, and I think so many times people think, well, if I really love what I'm doing, then I should continue doing that. And what I hear with you, what you're saying is, you can really love what you're doing and still say, hey, maybe I'm just ready for a new chapter.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a powerful idea for people, you know, so I love that. And then also, you know, you said there was a ton of uncertainty, yet you really felt peace. And I think that, again, those are two ideas that usually people are thinking, well, if there's uncertainty, I can't be at peace. What allowed you to be at peace?
I think it was just having faith. You know, I really feel that this decision was really God telling us that there was more for us to do, you know, even though we were doing so much. And I think just having that faith that, you know what, it's all going to work out. Just keep trusting, keep taking one step at a time. And that was very much out of my normal element. You know, I mean, I spent years of my life, you know, worrying about what's going to happen if this takes place, what's going to happen if that takes place. So it was really a, you know, complete change in, you know, my own mental state and where I was spiritually at that point in my life. So it was a complete shift from anything that I'd experienced previously.
Yeah. What that led me to think about there is when you said, you know, that you used to worry about what happens if this happens and whatnot, and you said it's a shift in your mental state. It almost sounds like, you know, so many times we think, you know, that we have the illusion of control, right? And it almost seems like maybe you surrendered a little bit of that. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's very fair. That's very fair. And again, I couldn't even explain how I did it. You know, it was just that time in my life to be able to kind of, you know, let go a little bit, you know, just trust the process.
Yep. Yeah. Trust the process and trust yourself. I love that. And you've mentioned a little bit about, you know, like you can't even begin to explain what it's like to be on the road. Cause like, so we're vacationing this summer down in Arkansas. And when I go cause I'm a road cyclist and there's one place I pass and it's, I don't know, there might be 50 to 70 RVs. And you know, it's really tight quarters. And I always think, oh my gosh, what if you end up next to someone who is like a partier or they're loud? I mean, what's it like? Is it, you know, just what's it like?
It's the RV community is such an incredible community, such a giving community. We've been very fortunate. Maybe once or twice we've gotten into a campground where our neighbors were slightly unruly, but even that, it was minimal.
Yeah.
But the people that we've met, they're so giving and willing to share knowledge and willing to help out. We do a lot of volunteer work. A lot of our journey revolves around volunteer work. We were able to connect with an organization called A Year to Volunteer, which is a RV-centric volunteer organization. And we'll go into a state park or a nonprofit organization and, you know, give 2 weeks of our time for, you know, whether it's building a fence or tent pads or painting, whatever it is. And that has really given us an incredible purpose to this journey. And again, mirroring a lot of what my mother did on, you know, her own journey. And, you know, when you get to roll up your sleeves and work and sweat next to somebody for, you know, 5-6 hours a day and understand their story as they're, you know, learning your story. It's an amazing community. And like I said, we've run into some issues and the community has been able to jump in. I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but when, you know, when I was a kid, like community was a real thing. Like you knew your neighbors, you know, mom would send me over if we were short on butter or something to borrow a stick of butter from the neighbor. They'd come over and get some sugar, whatever the case is. And it's not something you find a whole lot today. The RV community is like that.
Wow.
You know, the RV community is like that. We were in one of our first month or so doing this, couple months doing it. We were up in New Hampshire in a campground and we don't tow a vehicle. So we only have our 33-foot RV and that's it. So this couple, a few sites down from us, knew that we didn't have a tow vehicle and, you know, it was somewhat of a remote campground. They were going into town and they, you know, came up and knocked our door and were like, hey, we know you guys don't have a tow vehicle. We're heading into town. You know, do you need anything? And we actually did. We needed some milk and we needed, I forget, three items. And my wife was like, yeah, we actually do. And, you know, they picked some stuff up and we gave them the money. And it was, you know, that's not stuff you see a whole lot nowadays. I think we've lost that a little bit in society. So it's incredibly refreshing to, you know, to live in that type of world again.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned that because the first 12 years of my life, I grew up in it was a farming village in Illinois and very much like that. Like as a kid, if we were outside playing, there were my parents, but any other parents, they were also watching us. We knew it. Like, I remember the one time I was always getting into scrapes. I was just, you know, that tomboy, you know, a little too adventurous for my own good sometimes. And I remember I was riding my bike and I went over the handlebars and I landed face first in this huge mud puddle. Because of course I wanted to ride through the mud puddle and I hit something, but there was a can and there was like a flattened soda can. And I cut the inside of my lip. So I get up and I'm bleeding pretty bad because it's on my face. And I was right in front of Charlotte's house and she came out and she's like, "Oh, Bobby, what have you done now?" Because it was always something, but everyone was looking out for each other. And my dad and I, we talk about that, like just how much we miss that time. You know, it seems like a bygone era and it's really a shame that it is.
The term it takes a village to raise a child was so much more, you know, in place back then when we were growing up than what it is today. Because like you said, a neighbor could scold you as much as they could your bloody lip back then. Because, you know, if you came home and your mom and dad found out that, you know, if Mrs. Robinson had to get on you about, you know, running over a flower bush or something, you kind of had the double whammy there.
That's right. Because you knew that she was going to, you know, everyone's watching, but that was a good thing. You know, you mentioned the thing about giving and I want to go there too. It's funny that there's a great book called The Upside of Stress. And in that book, she talks about when we're giving, it has an effect where it helps us. It doesn't necessarily reduce the stress that we feel, but it reduces the negative effects and it helps us be ready. Like it kind of recharges our battery, you know? So I think that's really important because anytime I volunteered my time, it's like, wow, you just feel good. You kind of feel more connected. And you've said this, your mom was a tremendous giver. It seemed like it seems like that's a big part of her legacy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think growing up, you know, the fact that I was the youngest of three children, before I was in school, if she was going out to volunteer, if she was doing Meals on Wheels or whatever she was doing, I just got drug along to do it. That had an incredible impact on me as I became an adult. And I think that's something that, I think more of our parents should be doing is getting their kids involved in understanding the importance of giving back at a younger age. I mean, it's one of the things with our organization. I mean, we were a youth sports organization, but a big component of what we did was instilling in our kids the importance of giving back. And a lot of that was just me understanding the influence it had on me, you know, that as a 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 year old, you know, this is just what we did. So as I became an adult, it was very natural for me to go out and volunteer and give them my time and help out whenever I could. And like you said, it's funny, you go into those instances thinking that you're the giver and you walk away feeling like you received.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. So I can absolutely agree that it would lower that stress level and you know, just change the way that stress affects you in general.
Yeah. It's kind of paradoxical the way that it works. So, you know, how it's paradoxical, your mom, I know she participated in Hands Across America and I was really disappointed because she was holding hands with Jim McMahon and she did not have a high opinion of him. And of course I'm a Bears fan. So I was a little disappointed in that. But now she met a lot of interesting people in her journey.
She did. And that was a big part of the reason why I wanted to podcast and wanted to tell stories in real time through blogging and social media and podcasting. Because after she passed away and, you know, we're sitting there and we're looking through her journals and reading these stories about all these incredible people that she met and receiving letters from people after she passed who talked about just the impact that she had on their lives and just a, you know, 2 or 3 day interaction with her, you know, at her memorial service, people coming up to us and telling us about how, you know, something that she did literally saved their life, you know? So as we were talking about doing this and thinking about doing this, I was like, man, how cool would have it been for mom to be able to do what she did and share it in real time?
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to do that, because again, the people you meet, I mean, the world's a messed up place. I'm not going to dispute that. But I'll tell you what, if you're looking for good people, you're going to find them.
That's right.
Good people out there. And we've met them, you know, not only in campgrounds, but on street corners and, you know, just interacting And you find you have so much more in common with people if you just take the time to sit down and have a conversation with them, as opposed to just judging them by what they're wearing or the how their hair is cut or the color of their skin or the music they're listening to.
Like, yeah.
If you just sit down and have a conversation, you'll find out that, wow, we've got an enormous amount of things in common.
Yeah. It goes to what you said, Dan, though. It's, are you looking for them? Or are you looking for what's bad, what's wrong? Yep. You know, because we've all got that judge that can do that. And the truth of the matter is, and you know, we find what we look for.
Yes, we do.
So I love that. It's very interesting too. And I think I shared this to you when we were messaging on Podmatch before. When I started this podcast, it was like, there's so many good stories out there and we don't hear them. No, like I've done workshops for many, many years. And one of my icebreakers is, hey, if you really knew me, you would know. And I've been blown away by the things that people have. I'm like, there's so much goodness right here in this room, but yet we don't see it. We don't notice it. And I think that we need those stories. And okay, so this is a low bar, but it made me cry because I'm a little bit of a sap. And I think it was in the foreword to your book, maybe. And you're talking about your mom, and it's what your Aunt Sally said when your mom passed about what continuing the giving. Can you say about that? Because I'll cry.
I'll have to keep it together as well. But okay. So when my mom passed away, she was an organ donor as well. So she continued to give even in her last moments. And one of the things that she gave was the corneas of her eyes. And mm-hmm. my Aunt Sally had said, hopefully, whoever the recipient is will get to see as much as what my mom saw through those corneas. And it really hit home, you know.
Yeah.
And it, you know, one of the things that I think about all the time is that, you know, whoever has those, I certainly hope that they're putting them to as much use as what she did.
Yeah. And really seeing the beauty that seemed like your mom was always looking for that.
Yeah. And yeah. It's funny. I mean, my second book or third, depending on how you count it, because the first one was released twice in two different versions, but it's called Many Random Thoughts from the Road. My Journey, My Mother's Son, Many Random Thoughts from the Road. And there's a short chapter in there where I talk about sunrises. And my mom loved getting up early in the morning and going to see the sunrise. We lived in Florida at the time, going to see the sunrise over the beach. I was not a fan of this concept. 11 years old. But we were in that chapter. I talk about a time we were in Old Orchard and our campsite was like a mile walk from the beach. And my wife and I decided that the three of us, her and the dog, were going to go down and watch the sunrise the next day. And I got up before the alarm went off. I was so excited. And we went down there. It was one of the most beautiful sunrises we've ever experienced. And I just felt so close to her at that time. And there was, you know, kind of this mixed bag of emotions of, you know, I wish that I would have appreciated those moments a little bit more when I was a kid, when she was, you know, dragging me out of bed and, you know, taking me down there. But then an incredible gratitude that I did finally figure it out, that
yeah.
I was able to actually appreciate that moment in that time, because there's a lot of people who go their entire life and they don't appreciate those moments. So there's again, this mixed bag of, man, I wish I would appreciated it, but thank God I do now. You know,
that's right. You got there.
Yeah.
I've had that recently too, like not with the sunrises, although it does make me think I want to go see a sunrise, because it's easy to like, oh, I'd rather hit the snooze alarm. But you know, my dad he's 89. My mom passed in 2008. And I talk to my dad twice a week because my dad loves routine. So it's every Wednesday and every Sunday night at 5:30. That's what I'm going to be doing. And when he answers the phone, he sings to me. He always makes up a new wonderful daughter song. And it's like, I never know when it's, and I've recorded some of them because I'm like, these are priceless. But it's like some of those things that I think, man, I missed that about my dad when I was younger, but I'm so grateful I get to see it now. And I know I appreciate it a lot more now. Yep. And with your mom, you said that she taught you a lot of things, and something that I wanted to ask you about, because you said that she taught you that as a parent, God only requires you to teach two things, teach your children how to walk and then when to walk away. And then it's harder to learn how to walk away. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So she first said that to me. My daughter was in her teenage years and we were going through some, you know, some issues, as I think probably every.
No.
or any teenager. You know, I was just on the phone with her and looking for some advice. And she said that to me, you know, that again, God only teaches us, you know, requires us to do two things as parents. That's teach our kids how to walk and teach them how to walk away. And the second is a hell of a lot tougher than the first, she said. And it's so true, because as parents, you know, we want to protect our kids from everything. Not only help them make decisions, but we want to make decisions for them.
That's right.
Not understanding that we're not really teaching them a whole lot by making those decisions for them. We've got to be willing to step back and, you know, let them go face first into the mud puddle and their lip. Let them learn from getting scuffed up and getting some bruises and stuff. And it's tough as a parent because you want to protect your kids from everything. You want to protect them from all those outside influences. So it was pretty profound when she said that to me. And it's something has stuck with me for many years and probably will for the rest of my life. And I think it's a great lesson for parents to understand, especially nowadays. You know, again, going back to my youth sports days, you know, there's an awful lot of helicopter parents out there. And sometimes you just want to say, look, this is that time when you need to teach them how to walk away and let them fall down.
Yeah.
You'll be surprised. They'll actually get back up on their own.
Yeah. You know? I had a guest. Oh my God. He was one of my first guests, Dennis Stanton. And he's very involved in youth basketball. And one of the things he talked about is too many times parents try to buffer failure. And he's like, sometimes what a kid needs to feel is that failure, because it teaches them how to get up and improve. I mean, not failure to the point where they're going to get, you know, hurt, but that is, I mean, sometimes we have to experience that sting. You know what I mean?
Nobody goes through life undefeated.
That's right. Nobody. Greatest champions in the world, they get defeated, you know? Okay. So one other thing I want to ask you real quick too, is it was when you must have been at a program, and it was Pat McMahon, who was at the University of Florida. And he asked you the two sets of questions. Would you tell us those two sets of questions?
So the first set of questions was if you could make a list of the three most recent Heisman Trophy winners, Super Bowl champions.
What was it? The three richest people in the world.
Richest people in the world. And then the second list was, you know, the three people who taught you the most. And three people you admired most. I mean, you read it more recently than I wrote it, and I haven't read it. Be sticking with me. But I didn't have anybody on the first list that he asked for.
Yeah.
But at the top of the second list, my mom was at the top of every one of those lists. And sadly, that was the day she died. That later that night is when she was rushed into open heart surgery and never came out.
Wow.
So it was something that just, again, stuck with me.
Yeah.
Even though I can't specifically remember the questions without going back and looking at when I wrote it again.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was the top of the second list.
Yeah.
Those people made the most impacts on your life.
And they weren't famous. And I think that was kind of, that's what hit me. It's like the people who show up in the small moments, not for the glory, not for the spotlight. Yeah. And I think you even said something like, you know, the moral was, how do we be on that list for other people? You know, that we're the ones that they think of.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's exactly what Pat was getting to.
Yeah.
And again, this is taking place in a baseball coach's clinic. So, you know, a lot of people there are worried about the X's and O's and the technicalities of how to teach a kid how to be a good hitter, a good pitcher, a good fielder, whatever the case was. And Pat was just making that emphasis on, you know, at the end of the day, though, it's, you know, how are you going to teach them how to be a good human being? That's right. What's going to stick with them. And one of the greatest blessings that we've had on this new journey is for me to be able to connect with a lot of my old players I'd coached, and being able to, you know, see them now 20 some, 30 some years later, and the impact they're now making in the world, far beyond whatever they did on the baseball field. And that's been so rewarding for both me and Sandy, because Sandy made a lot of sacrifices for me to coach the amount of games, the amount of kids that I coached over the 30 years. So I think even for her, it's incredibly rewarding to kind of see those seeds that we planted blooming, seeing the ripple effect of the work we did out there doing their own good in the world today.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. You actually get to see the ripple effect.
Not a lot of people get to see that.
No.
So again, I consider myself incredibly blessed.
Yeah.
Incredibly blessed. I don't know if you ever read the book Tuesdays with Maury.
I think I did years and years ago.
But he talks about that. You know, he was a college professor and at one point talked about how he never understood why a lot of his students wouldn't come back to see him. You know, that kind of affected him, again, wondering, you know, yeah, if his work had been validated, so to speak. All of a sudden, when he gets ALS, then a lot of his students start to come back and visit him.
Yeah. Yeah. Did we matter? I think that's a question that we all want to matter.
Yeah.
Wow. So, Dan, that's a great way to kind of end. Except tell us a little bit about, like, if people want to check out your podcast, or your books, you know, how can they find out more?
Everything is on my website. So you can either use journeymymotherson.com or danplauser.com. They both go to the same site. Sometimes people don't want to type all the letters in son.com. So it's just easier to go to danclauser.com. But everything there, you can get, there's a link to Amazon for my books, or if you want a signed copy, you can get them directly through my website. Shipping on signed copies depends on where we might be in the world. So we try to make sure we get close to a post office when we get an order to get those out in a timely fashion, but there may be a little couple day lag, which we keep you up to date on. And all my blogs are there, links to the podcast, which is also available on Spotify and iTunes and everywhere where podcasts are found. And then if anybody's interested in having me come speak at an event, there's information there as well for that.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I knew this was just going to be a fun conversation, and you did not disappoint.
Thank you very much, Bobby. I really appreciate the opportunity.
I hope that you enjoyed Dan's story. As I talked with Dan, I was really aware of his presence and his sense of peace and joy. I hope that you could feel that as well. Here are my insights for thriving. Number one, you can absolutely love what you do and still be ready for a new chapter. I think that we often miss that. We think that something has to be wrong or bad for us to want to make a change. Yet sometimes, maybe it's just time for the next stage of our growth or journey. Insight number two, you can feel peace even as uncertainty swirls around you. I really noticed that in Dan's story. And Dan said it really well when he said that it was a shift of his mental state, which, by the way, is the power of building our mental fitness. I think that peace can come from a number of things, but three things really stand out to me based on my coaching experience. And these are all valid and viable, and one isn't better than the next. Probably all three of them together is even better. But the first one is sometimes our peace comes from our faith. The second one is sometimes peace comes from having confidence in ourselves and in our ability to handle whatever might arise. A couple of weeks ago, I saw this. I don't even know where it was, but it was a picture of a bird sitting on the end of like a branch. And it was a really thin, flimsy branch. And what it said is the bird doesn't get confidence in the strength of the branch. The bird gets its confidence from its ability to fly. And I just thought that was a really wise insight, because we don't control the circumstances around us, but we can have confidence that no matter what happens, we'll be okay. And then finally, number three, sometimes peace comes when we let go of the need for control, which often is an illusion anyway. There is so much that we cannot control, and we can waste a lot of time when we try to manhandle those things. We are far better off focusing on the things that we actually do have some control over, which is limited to what we do, not what others do or that we can make others do. So for example, I don't control whether it's going to rain, but I do control whether or not I have a raincoat with me when the forecast calls for rain. I don't control whether or not other drivers are polite, but I do control how I drive and my response when another driver maybe isn't so polite. And I cannot control if my boss is in a bad mood or is a poor communicator or they don't listen or whatever, but I do control how I respond. So are we putting our focus on the right things? And finally, insight number three, good people are all around us if we take the time to look and notice without judging. I really loved that. And I've challenged myself to find two new good people each day as I go about my week. I hope that you'll join me in that challenge. I wonder how that might change things. That wraps up this episode. I hope that you found inspiration in Dan's story, and maybe you'll take, make some time this week for, I don't know, maybe a sunrise or a sunset or whatever might bring a little more joy to your day. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate all of you, and we wouldn't be here without you. So thank you so much for your support. It means the world to us. I hope that these episodes help you to thrive no matter what.